and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, a roundtable discussion on Truth and Trust, Alaska's News Media in the 21st Century. Hosted by the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications, Mike Dugan, University of Alaska Anchorage Atwood Chair of Journalism, served as moderator of the panel, which included NPR correspondent and UAA journalism professor Elizabeth Arnold, KTUU TV's Steve McDonald, UAA journalism student Pearl Grace Rasmussen, Alaska Dispatch reporter Jill Burke, and Anchorage Daily News reporter Kyle Hopkins. Truth and Trust, Alaska's News Media in the 21st Century, a roundtable discussion, was recorded at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage on February 7th.
I want to welcome you. I am Paola Banquero. I'm an associate professor and chair of the Department of Journalism and Public Communications at UAA. And we have with us a very distinguished panel of journalists and Mike Dugan. And Mike Dugan is our Atwood Chair of Journalism for 2013. Mike, as you probably all know, was a longtime reporter, editor, and then Metro columnist for the Anchorage Daily News. And then he did something we all probably fantasize about. He left and for a while was did PR for Democrats. I don't know if we fantasize about that, but... Then he ran for the legislature and won and represented Spinard very well for several years. Was it 6 years? Mm-hmm. So we've selected him as our Atwood Chair of Journalism, and that means that he is among our very experienced professional faculty at UAA. He is the senior faculty member who has deep and... really impressive experience in journalism and brings that to the classroom. And what he also does is he does outreach, and so this event is part of that outreach. And so I'm going to pass it on to him.
Thank you, Paola. I have to say that in the pursuit of truth, I have to tell you that senior means old. And that it's not true that I first started in journalism before the invention of the printing press. So anyway, I'm going to start on my right, believe it or not, and ask you to introduce yourself and say whatever else you might want to say that is acceptable in mixed company.
Okay, wait a minute. So the right jab, that was because NPR is on the left side of the dial, and that means that they're a left-leaning organization, and therefore I'm a left-leaning.
Yeah, that's pretty much
and
it.
I'm the only one with a glass of wine here, too. No. I'm Elizabeth Arnold, and I teach at UAA, and a couple of my students are here, which is fantastic. And I worked for NPR for many, 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 many years, and now I have the luxury of when they call me and ask me to do a story, I go, nah, not this time. So I freelance now for them and for Marketplace and a number of other programs, and I'm loving teaching because it makes me deconstruct everything I do, and that's about it.
I'm Steve McDonald. I'm with Channel 2 News, and I'm currently working my dream job. I'm the Special Projects Manager with Channel 2, as I said, and I have the task of producing 4 one-hour specials a year and helping out whatever else I can do or my news director makes me do. And by the way, if I'm going to put you on the spot really quick, I'm going to introduce Tracy Szabo. She's our news director at Channel 2. She's just been here a number of months, but I'm glad you're out here, Tracy. And now I have a couple other colleagues who are out there from Channel 2 as well.
So, Tracy, you haven't just up sticks and left already?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Pearl Grace Rasmussen. I'm a junior at UAA and a broadcast journalism major. I'm a fairly new journalist. I've been working at KRUA Radio since August, and I'm happy to be here.
Hi, my name is Jill Burke. I'm a staff writer with Alaska Dispatch, and prior to that, I worked with Steve for several years over at KTUU.
My name is Kyle Hopkins. I'm a reporter at the Anchorage Daily News, and before that, I worked at the Anchorage Press and the Fairbanks Daily News Miner.
Thank you. I thought I'd start with a question that I guess is sort of at the heart of every journalist at this point, which is, what do you think are the main problems with journalism today? Who wants to start? Well, in that case, Steve.
Somebody's gonna start, right? Main problem with journalism. Journalism or journalists? I guess they're both have. No. I think we're really stretched thin. I think most newsrooms will probably admit that right now, that there's a lot to do and probably a fewer people to do those jobs. There are some real positive challenges out there, though. I think that's probably, I think in a way journalism came to grasp with the fact that it is a business. We like to think it's a calling, but it is a business, and it's got to adhere to the bottom line as much as we don't really want to. Right? So we know. But I think we're adapting, we're evolving. You've got to evolve or die these days to remain in front of the public and to continue to grow. But I think right now is just, I think people will tell you if a journalist is probably doing a lot with some fewer resources this time around, this era, this year.
From my perspective, I think the problem is oversaturation. There's so many entities, there's so many platforms, and speed. So there's such a race to get it out because you're competing against so many entities and so many platforms. The downside of that is with speed comes you risk accuracy, fairness, and context. And I sort of think that with the proliferation of so much and everyone racing to get it out there so fast, we have lost that sort of moment to take a breath and to provide context and accuracy.
I agree with Steve. I agree with you also, but I don't see it more as a problem. I see it more as a challenge that you need to be versatile. You need to know how to do everything in order to get a good story in limited time. But I think that gives you some chance to grow and to learn how to become a better journalist.
I think that touching off what everybody has said here, you know, one of the side effects of having to do more faster or do more with less staff is the potential for shallowness in your reporting and also lack of quality. And I think that's a problem. It's easy to pump stuff out or to aggregate or curate from somebody else or just rewrite a press release, but I'm not sure that does anybody really any good. To the minimal extent, it might be somewhat interesting. How useful is it? And then I actually was chatting about this with some of my colleagues, and one of them brought up a good point that, you know, adaptation is critical. Technology is changing, and it's going to continue to change. And we, are, as journalists, are going to be continue to be tasked with how do we adapt our content, our knowledge, our quality control to the devices that people are using and the technology that's out there. And it's easy to take a new gadget or a new device and try to rely on that to kind of carry your momentum and look away from the quality of the product, the quality of the storytelling, the quality of the news gathering, just quality control overall. And then monetizing the way that journalism is changing, the multiple platforms and the consumptive habits of readers is also a big challenge and I think will continue to be.
Maybe if I could just drill down a little bit on what Steve said and just talk a little bit about why it's a problem that there's too few people. Because two or three good reporters can do a lot of damage at a small outfit. You can do a lot of good work. But I think the problem is when you've got every outlet is kind of chasing the same kind of low-tier stories, and you have all these duplicate, you have all these people who are telling the exact same story with the exact same facts, and they're doing it quickly, and then they're kind of moving on to the next thing. And so you have you know, five people at five outlets who are just telling you the same story all day long, and they're not kind of going any deeper. And I find when I'm, you know, personally at work, what I find the most frustrating is when you're writing something that you know that four other people in four other newsrooms are writing at the same time. And the key is to kind of just get that done, do that, and then, you know, try and find the thing that you can make time for later in the day that other people aren't doing, or take that same story that, you know, that everyone did, you know, to this level, and then just kind of drill down on that story for a while. And another problem with too few people is just, you know, and it's, you know, I'm not one to talk because I like to be a general assignment reporter. I tend to, if I have a beat for a while, for a year or two, I kind of want to do something else usually. But it's super valuable to have people who are working a beat and really learn it and understand it. And if you just keep piling beats on top of reporters so that one person is covering, you know, five different things, there you lose the value of just of really getting to know an issue and understand an issue and kind of finding the real stories.
Thanks. Everybody out here knows what a beat is? Okay, good. So we've talked about the need for speed, understaffing, and I think uniformity. Are there other things that are affecting your jobs? I guess they're all perfect otherwise, huh? Either way.
We touched on technology, which what did we say? If we said the word Twitter, we did a shot?
Every time you say Twitter or tweets, the audience has to do a shot.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So Twitter. Yeah, right. Now, technology has certainly changed the way we report, and I think in a very good way in a lot of respects. In some ways, it's the thing that's piled on journalists that makes their day a little bit crazier and chaotic, more chaotic. But we are reaching wider audiences than ever before. Someone could be filing stories from say Nome that are now going to be seen or heard or read throughout the world, and that I think that's pretty exciting for a journalist at any stage of their career to have that kind of an audience or the potential audience. So I think technology is and the development of technology is certainly presenting an exciting challenge, and it sure has changed the way our jobs are handled. It used to be that we got our assignments in the morning meeting, and then we went off and we covered them. It's not even that good. I can remember what we used to do in the early days of the TV news business is we'd wait for the edition of the Anchorage Daily News, open it up and say, let's do this story, and this story. And then about 11:30 in the morning, the Times came out, and we ran up to the store and bought a copy of that and said, let's do this story, that story. And that's how we did TV news back in the early 80s. It's not a joke, unfortunately. But now, and our newscast was on at, 6 o'clock at night or whatever. Now it's not. It's like as soon as you get there and you get a few facts, that's when the newscast is on. Because we've got people who've got these apps and these phones, and they all want to know the news right away. So we had I just checked with our web guru Jeffrey Rivett before I came down here. We have 655,000 people who've downloaded our app for the month of January. That's a staggering amount of people or hits, I guess, that our website gets, that our app gets for information. So we've got to feed that beast all the time. And it's an exciting challenge, but nonetheless, it is a challenge. Anybody else want to take this thing away?
Well, I mean, I would augment what I said about speed and sort of the race to get it on. And are there any editors in the audience? Good. So what you have is you're trying to do your story, and you've got editors who are reading everything and every blog and every tweet and everything, and they're constantly calling you saying, why don't you have this? And so you're spending a lot of time saying, well, actually, that's wrong, and that's, you know, that's a development, but that's a development in this direction, and the story I'm working on is here, and they got that wrong, or whatever. So you spend so much time sort of putting out fires, again, that you don't have time to take that breath and focus. And at some point, you have to just say stop and write your story. And there's so much going on, and it's happening in a 24-hour cycle, and it's happening, you know, with lightning speed, and you're constantly beating off editors who are telling you, you know, there's more developments. It's sort of just, there's a lot of noise, and it's really hard to turn that noise off and just do what you do best. That's what I mean by accuracy, context, and fairness. That sort of gets lost because everybody's just rushing to get stuff on.
If I could make one quick comment before I hand this out. When I referred back to the early 80s and how we were doing TV news. At that time, I kind of felt, because we were so off the beaten path, and Alaska is all by itself, we weren't close to any other markets that you could emulate what was going on. We saw the network news, that kind of thing. We really weren't sure what we were doing and if what we were doing was right. So we were making it up as we went along in a lot of ways. Not the facts, but as how we did things. And in a way, I think that dealing with the web and dealing every day with posting things on the internet, in a way I feel like we're making it up as we go along now, because it is so new and it's changing so rapidly. We're still trying to figure out exactly what this is.
Let's talk about that for a minute. So how has your job been changed with technology, and what do you see as the things that are likely going to be happening here in the next 5 years or technologically that are going to make a change?
You know, this is something we talk about a lot, and I think about a lot because, you know, when I started in newspapers and my first jobs in college and out of college were in newspapers, you know, we had email accounts and newspapers were putting their stories online, but it was nothing like it is now. It was very much an afterthought, and there was, you know, when I was in school and I got my first kind of job at a daily newspaper, I can remember there was one computer in the middle of the room, and that was the internet computer. And, you know, and people were like, every once in a while they'd go sit at the internet computer and they would, ask Jeeves something or whatever. And it just was very much an afterthought. And then, you know, I can't even really remember when it changed. I can remember, you know, a few years later, we were posting our stories online. I can remember going to editors and being like, hey, we should let people comment, like, on the bottom of these stories, you know, and people could, like, react to, you know, which turned out to be, like, the worst kind of can of worms ever, clearly. But now, I mean, the job is, there are days when it's a totally different job than it used to be, where, you know, when I was a crime reporter, you know, you wrote a lot. You were churning in the same way, you know. Reporters have always churned. There's always been low quality work. Like, high volume, low quality work is not a new thing, especially for those of us who, like, worked at kind of smaller places. Like, that's just what you did even when there was no internet. You know, it's just it all piled up and then went in the paper at the end of the day instead of kind of going online throughout the day. You know, when I talk to people about this now, I mean, one point I try to make is that the job to me is much more fun than it used to be. And, you know, because of those changes, like, I enjoy the job more now because I just have these toys to play with that I didn't back then. You know, it's fun to make, I don't know, like, there's the discussion about serving readers and kind of your audience and stuff, and there's also just kind of the day-to-day, what makes you want to go to work. And it's fun to make videos, and it's fun to kind of, you know, if I'm talking to someone and I'm thinking, this is a really good interview, you know, how am I going to describe this? How am I going to describe the way they look and the way that they're speaking and stuff? And, you know, maybe I'm not a good enough writer to do that. But if I just shoot a video I could put online, I can just be able to look. This was an amazing conversation. All that stuff is exciting. I mean, it has all the drawbacks that we've talked about and are going to kind of keep talking about. But that's a point I like to make, is that just the day to day, I think, is more fun that we kind of have these tools to play with.
I think I would add, if you're talking technology in the sense of, say, social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, all the different ways that you can not only seek out information, but you can engage readers, you can get information about your story out, you can get more eyeballs to your story, you can have kind of the conversation that makes whatever you're doing relevant or interesting to more people is really important. And I find now you can find a lot of information really quickly to try to add more to whatever you're writing about, more context, more breadth, more depth. You can also find people. Like, sometimes I can't find somebody in a phone book or find a listing for them, but I can find them on Facebook, and I can send them a message and introduce myself. And more often than not, they'll get back to you. They may not want to talk to you, but you've at least made the connection. And I think those are really valuable things. excuse me. You know, you also have to be able to wade through that stuff and know which among it you can trust and kind of maintain good boundaries in your news gathering efforts. And I think that you also, that, you know, there's a challenge for the writers and the authors when you're going out on different mediums. You know, your 2,000-word story that's published in your newspaper or on your website is going to be something very different if you're trying to plug it on Twitter. You know, how do you maintain your same kind of voice or interest level with your readers on Twitter that you do on your website, that you do on Facebook? And they're all a little bit different. They require personality. They require kind of constant feeding. We've heard people talk about that before.
First of all, Twitter. That's three shots. No, I'm just joking. Just being a young journalist, I've only been the sports reporter at the radio station since August, so I can't really say how technology has developed with me through my experience. But I can say that after doing stories on air on the radio, it's almost second nature for me to post it on our website or Twitter or Facebook, so that just comes naturally. Do I know what's going to happen in 5 years? I don't, but I know it's going to be more about immediacy and how convenient it will be to get that story, and I'm excited to see how that develops.
That's a good point. The folks who are coming into the shops today have grown up with this technology, or this basic form of technology. It certainly has evolved, but it is second nature to the folks who are coming into the newsrooms today. Where it's for folks like me, I've had to wean myself off the electric typewriter, and then. Yeah. Oh, you didn't have electricity? And then we did. Plugged it in and just learn a whole new language. So I think that is something that it's a real advantage for the journalists who are coming up now, is it will be second nature or is second nature, and they're going to be a lot faster at it than I am.
So are we just talking about technology or other development? Because, I mean, I think that what's really changed in terms of journalism in my era is the elephant in the room, which is Fox and MSNBC and sort of opinion-based journalism. And that's there, and I don't see it going away. I really don't. But I do, in my I really do believe there will always be an appetite for informative, fair reporting. I don't think that's going to change. I think there's a proliferation of opinion-based journalism, but I don't think the appetite for fair, unbiased, informative journalism will go away. I really don't. And that's really important. And I also think there's a lot of talk about how, because revenues are declining for print and all of that, we don't get the investigative stuff, we don't get the really meaty stuff that takes a long time to go out and do. And boy, I really disagree with that, because I think there are so many entities out there now, fund for investigative journalism, fund for environmental reporting, fund for this. I mean, just watch the NewsHour. I mean, most of the best pieces they have on every night are paid for by somebody else. So the NewsHour doesn't have money for it, but other entities do. And I just think that there's actually more outlets than there ever were before for that kind of journalism, which is great.
There's a lot of talk about the advantages of what's going on now in our business. The technology's been a good thing all the way around, but you know, one of the things that you have to realize is that trying to find a specific thing on the internet is like trying to get a drink of water from a fire hose, and that not everything that you're going to see there has been vetted or, you know, that you can trust. So the question I've got here is, if you agree that that's part of the downside of journalism now, what are the other elements? I'm not talking here about, you know, people going out of business or anything like that. I'm just talking about what is what you report and write different, and in what ways, in what bad ways, I guess you'd say, are they different?
I don't know. I don't think I've changed. I don't think it has changed me. I mean, so there's Twitter and there's Facebook and there's all these other. So it's not the Yellow Pages anymore, you know. So I can't find somebody. I can find them, but that's no substitute ever for me going face to face to this guy and doing a great interview with him and putting him on the air and getting the story. I mean, it hasn't changed the value of that encounter with that person. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I just don't see it changing that.
No, I think there's always going to be a market for good journalism, and I think that's what you were saying before too. Is that our viewers, our readers, our listeners are always going to want good, fair, accurate reporting, and as long as we're doing that job, then I think we'll be okay. I think people, most folks, the vast majority of folks out there can tell the difference between NBC, CBS, ABC, and MSNBC and Fox. I think they can tell the difference, and they know what's opinion and they know what's considered balanced journalism. And I think as long as good journalists are doing journalism, I think it'll be just fine. There's going to be some challenges and some tribulations out there, but I think good journalism is always going to rise to the top, and we'll always figure out a way how to present that to our audience.
As long as Mike's inviting us to complain. I will say one thing that I just this week, I hadn't been thinking about at all until just this week, and it didn't occur to me in the context of this talk or whatever, but just in the course of doing work that you know, we talked a little bit about you know, doing lots of work or doing it shallow, and one thing I think about a lot is there's lots of things that you have to report, right? If there's a car crash in Midtown and in a street is blocked, like, everyone kind of needs to report that, and you need to get that done quickly, and you just have to do it. And so we're trying to find ways to, how do you do that quickly and kind of make time for the other things that you want to do and you can feel good about and stuff. But one thing that occurred to me this week is that, you know, I'm glad that, you know, I had those few years of working when, you know, there was kind of no online competition and it wasn't a consideration. Because I think if I was just starting right now, I think there is the potential for people to learn pretty bad habits when it comes to, you know, especially if you're looking at, you know, you're reporting online, you're seeing what stories get lots of traffic, and you're learning that, you know, you could spend 15 minutes on a story and that could be the most read story of the day. Then what is that teaching you as a reporter? You know, that's teaching you to spend 15 minutes on a story, or that at least, you know, it's going to take a lot of discipline and kind of, you know, and editors who kind of keep their eye on the ball to kind of not fall in, you know, not to be tempted by that, right? And so, you know, a few years ago, maybe you wouldn't put that online right away, and you would drive out there and like try and talk to somebody who was involved in the accident, or kind of, you know, just trying to get a scene, you know, a sense of the scene and stuff. And people still do that, and people still do a great job of that kind of reporting. But boy, just the undertow to just kind of to do the other thing, I feel, is just strong, and like I said, I just think it's going to breed bad habits.
Yeah, I think that's a tough tension because we all want more readers or viewers, right? I think one of the effects of these changes is that it will force outlets, regardless of whom you are, to kind of do identity checks, both on themselves and on their readers. Who are their consumers? What do they want? How do I get it to them? What makes the story I'm going to tell different than what they might find somewhere else? And what makes it useful to them? And how am I going to reach out to them? And it's going to make, you know, a staff in a newsroom, along with whatever technology team they have with them, to sit down and think about, who are we? What are we doing? What are we about? what are we offering, and how do we do that best in this situation, whether it's breaking news of the day or whether it's something that's removed from the day's immediate kind of like stenography events and something that offers more analysis on maybe a big issue affecting a state or a neighborhood.
Going back to what Elizabeth said, she's not going to change. She's going to go out there and cover the story. Like Mike said, with the internet, there's a bunch of things out there, and sometimes you won't be able to figure out what is true. Is this true? They say sometimes it's this or that. No, that's kind of lazy just to pull it out and say, this is the headline. Journalists are not lazy. They're the ones who actually get out there, the ones in the front row trying to dig for the story. So they aren't going to go on the internet and take that. They're actually to dig for the story, and that's what we're going to do.
Thanks. Somebody made a mention of the sort of the phenomena of sort of outlets and jobs and all of that sort of drying up here. And I can remember when I was first at the Daily News, there were 30 reporters maybe on that during in because of the newspaper war that was going on. I think there's 7 or 8 now reporters at the Daily News, which is probably in print anyway, still the best staffed newspaper. So what do you think is going to happen? You know, I mean, where is this convergence of you know, finances on the one side and technology on the other, where's that going to take us?
Well, I mean, I think it's already happening, right? But I don't think, again, I'm the optimist here. I think it's already happening. And yes, okay, jobs are drying up here. The old style, okay, we're all going to be in a big room and someone is going to yell, copy, and, you know, we're all news reporters for... I'm really dating myself now. Come on, seriously? Right. But at the same time, like I said, there, in my day, you had to get a job on a newspaper to get to. You had to know how to swim before you could get in the pool, or you had to get a job, and you had to get your foot in the door, right? And you had to get a job on a newspaper, right? Nowadays, you can say, okay, I am really interested in fish, and I'm interested in fish politics, and I'm a UAA journalism student, and I'm going to learn everything I possibly can about fish politics, and I'm going to have a blog. And it's going to be so damn good and so damn accurate and informative that people are going to go to this blog. So you have that outlet. You never had that outlet back in the day. You had to get on a newspaper. And so I think there are way more opportunities now to get your foot in the door and start something and say, hey, I'm good at what I'm doing, and you can trust me.
Yeah, but can you make any money doing that?
You can.
Don't look at me. I don't know.
Well, but back in the day, you were taking a job at a newspaper, and you're saying, you don't have to pay me. I just want the experience.
Actually, I never said that to anybody.
I think I made like $6.50 an hour my first job. I didn't care how much overtime I worked. Just work them, and he doesn't cost us anything. Now I forgot what I was going to say about that.
No money, no jobs. No,
oh, I know. You're talking about, yeah, what's the future going to hold for the newsrooms and things like that, and staff sizes and things like that. I think our staff has as many positions now as it did 5-6 years ago, and we did see a little dip. And I think that was just because, again, we're trying to figure things out a little bit. We had this new technology. We had to figure out how it was going to work. I think we're still doing that. And I think there was a tendency for, I'm just kind of, this conjecture on my part, I think there was a tendency for some newsrooms maybe to cut back because we didn't know where we were going to go. And maybe if I just hit this button on a phone, it's going to take the place of like 3 different people so I can lay some people off. I think now people... who are running the shops are saying, okay, we do need a few more people to make this work the right way. So I think we'll get back to a balance. I think we're doing that now, I think.
Let me just add to that question. Clearly, technology is against newspapers because of, in just terms of the actual newspaper, it takes so long to get it out of the newsroom through the computers and on somebody's doorstep. That doesn't seem to be the case, and of course that'll change if more and more of that is done electronically than is now. And the other, you know, the radio and the TV have sort of technological advantages, and apparently the internet does too, if you can consider that to be a separate kind of journalism creature. But what do you see that meaning, how that means to the future of the other three? What's it going to mean to print newspapers? What's it going to mean to radio reporting? What's it going to mean to, you know, television reporting? And I think you're probably the first one who ought to answer that, because you're sort of in between, aren't you?
Sure. I don't know. I'm going to ask you to just kind of clarify that question for me. I got a little lost along the way.
Well, you're not a traditional newspaper that you're working for. It's not a traditional radio station. It's not a traditional TV station. It's a new breed of cat. And so the question is, you know, if you can sort of take a look at what's happening in others, what do you see as the future of what it is you're doing?
Wow, I'd get a big raise if I could get that one right. I really think adaptation is going to really dominate what we're doing all the time. You're backgrounded by doing quality journalism. You're going to have to adapt to react to the reader's habits and to what you have decided is important as your news gathering operation in terms of mission and values and content. I did read, this kind of should hearten Elizabeth a little bit, I was scouring through the Nieman Journalism Labs, and they have a whole project on, you know, the future for 2013 journalism. And there was one author who said that it is quality, high-quality original reporting is going to have a big comeback in 2013 because he had categorized the entities as the incumbents, that would be kind of the legacy media, and the disruptors, which would be the new up-and-coming sites, the emerging kind of new media outlets. A lot of the disruptors, this guy argued, have been able to survive on curating or aggregating the content of the incumbents who have invested in the reporters who are high quality, who can get the good stories, who provide the unique content. But with the shrinkage of revenue and the shrinkage of staff, there's going to be less material to feed off of. And if the disruptors have any desire to survive in the next couple of years, they will have to invest in their own newsrooms and provide their own reporters and provide their own original content. And therefore, you're basically going to have high-quality reporting and original content competing for readers and consumers across the platforms, which I love. I mean, I was like, yeah. but I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question.
I just want to add to that. So you can never replace the wire guy, right? The wire guy, no matter how many aggregators there are out there, they've got to be aggregating something. And so the wire guy, right, or you and me, somebody's got to be out there actually getting the story, so that some of these guys who all they do all day is sit in front of their computers and aggregate everything have something to say. So you can't ever get rid of the wire guy. You always need the wire guy. Too bad Dan Joling's not here, because it's like we could give him a big toast. But I just don't see, you know, like original reporting is never going to go away. You can't. Somebody's got to go out there and do it.
Yeah, as Mark Twain once said, there'll always be newspapers because the people on the south end of hell will want to know what the people at the north end of hell are doing. I'm going to give everybody a chance to say anything that they haven't said quickly, and then I think we're going to open up to questions. So,
going back to newspapers, yes, TV and radio do have a technological advance, but they do value the writing in newspaper. I mean, all a journalist is good writing. You need to have that skill. And like you said earlier, in the newsroom, it was 40 people and went down to 8. well, you need to be versatile too. You need to know how to work a camera, or you need to know how to put a story broadcasting. You need to know how to write, and that is really imperative for journalism.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to a roundtable discussion on Truth and Trust, Alaska's news media in the 21st century. Hosted by the University of Alaska Anchorage Department of Journalism and Public Communications, Mike Dugan, Atwood Chair of Journalism, served as moderator of the panel, which included NPR correspondent and UAA professor Elizabeth Arnold, KTUU-TV's Steve McDonald, UAA journalism student Pearl Grace Rasmussen, Alaska Dispatch reporter Jill Burke, and Anchorage Daily News reporter Kyle Hopkins. Following the roundtable discussion, the panel responded to audience questions. First, an audience member asked, how is the media dealing with the many different platforms and mediums today? Elizabeth Arnold responded.
You know, as a radio journalist, when they first told us that we had to start taking pictures, I mean, it was all hell broke loose because we were artists. And we go out to do the story, and we just think about the ear, you know. And if I have to take photos, that's going to change everything, and then I'm not going to be listening the way I should be listening. And, you know, that was just photos. And they said, okay, we'll pay you $20 per photo. So that changed everything. I was like, ch-ch-ch-ch. But I learned that having those photos, especially when I delayed doing the story, helped actually when I was telling the story, because there were cues there. There were things that I didn't remember just for the ear, just through the tape, that I could put in my story. So it helped. However, you know, I'd be a fool to tell you that I'm a great photographer, I'm a great videographer, blah, blah, no way. So, I mean, I don't know about all of you, but, you know, you can be pretty good at a lot of things, but you're generally going to be real good at maybe one or two things. I'm still a radio reporter at my heart. I'm not a great photographer. So I do all those other things, but you know, the story's going to really sing when it's a radio story for me. I have to do all those other things, and you know, all journalists do now, but every story can be told best probably by one platform or another, and so I'm really happy when it's going to be a great audio story.
The next question from the audience was, do you see more people in newsrooms dedicated to new technologies and pulling in viewers through different types of media? First, Steve McDonald responded, followed by Elizabeth Arnold.
We've got those folks in our newsroom right now, and every single day they teach me something new about the net, the internet, and that whole medium. It's I feel like I kind of have gotten a graduate's degree in a lot of sense because of what they've taught me. And so I think in a real sense, we've got those people in our newsroom right now, and they just help us get the maximum out of our stories for the most part every single day. And we'd be lost without them, that's for sure.
I hate that guy. I mean, they're already out there. And it's great, but I hate that guy. I just got a call from him tonight. I'm working on a Shell story, and he's like, he's the marketplace web guru, whatever, and he wants me to do like an online thing, interactive, blah, 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 right? And I'm like, oh, God, I just want to get this story done. So they're out there, and they're great. And I think when I complain about that guy, I think way back to Clinton campaign 1992, David Broder, Washington Post, my hero, you know, always went door to door when we reporters were like, oh, do we really have to go door to door? And in that campaign, it was the first time that the candidates were taking their show someplace else besides the organized, you know, chicken dinners. And they were going on Oprah and Phil and all that. And we were dragged to all these green rooms. And we were all like, you know, what are they doing? Arsenio Hall or whatever, and we're like, what are they doing? And David Broder, old guy, by my standards at the time, said, Elizabeth, the more people involved, the more people who are getting involved in politics and hearing the candidates, and the more living rooms this is reaching, the better. And so whenever I complain, oh, these people, you know, it's the same guys on the web, they're going to, you know, they're going to use profanity and say that I don't know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. I think about David Broder, who was embracing the new way before I was ready to, and saying, you know, the more, the better. And so the guy that called me tonight
want me to do the online chat. I'm going to do it.
Another question from the audience was, given the growing disparity in power, what is the ability of the media to hold people accountable? First, Kyle Hopkins responded, followed by Jill Burke, Steve McDonald, Elizabeth Arnold, and then Mike Dugan.
I don't know. By what measure are the powerful people more powerful? All I'll say in response to that is that, the best reporters and the best journalism is that unflinching, clear-eyed attempt to, to look at authority, to hold people in power accountable, right? And I'm trying to think of a good recent example, but I mean that's the goal, right? I mean, for a lot of people, that's why they get into journalism, is they want, because of Woodward and Bernstein, and they kind of were inspired, and especially certainly a couple generations of people, that's what they want to achieve is to do that, even if it's just on their local level at the city hall and stuff, and every reporter wants that really bad. I guarantee you, everyone wants to do that. Not everyone can do it or knows how to do it, but they want to. If they fail to do that, it's often because, they get intimidated, or they kind of can't see the story, or, it's not because of a lack of intent, I think. And I think there's lots of good local examples of that kind of reporting. That's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, I would just add, I think that, it is a problem when you lose beat reporters and you lose specialized reporters in particular industries or areas, because the more eyes you have on the ball that are on that ball consistently, the more corruption will be revealed, the more you'll get to know the personalities, the more you'll have the context to understand whether what you're being told or parroted is, spin or accurate, or whether you should be offering something more to it. And I have to believe that while we are challenged with newsrooms that in many cases are shrinking, that news consumers like yourself are always going to seek out the news that satisfies their desire for more information. And as long as that exists, there will be outlets that will adapt and provide that content. And at some point, it's got to settle out. There's room for everything. And I think one of the tensions is, we talked about at the very beginning, with the changing kind of media climate and the changing revenue climate, where do you strike that balance? And I don't know that we have kind of found that sweet spot yet, but that's kind of everything that's evolving. It's going to evolve this year, and it'll evolve over the next 5 years and the next 10 years. So.
I think we do a pretty good job of holding people accountable. I do, Jeff. I know I've been in news meetings for better part of 30 years, and I've never heard us say, well, let's get this guy today or anything like that. We've never had or let's protect this, or let's boost that. It's always been to go out and get the story, and I do think we do a good job of holding government, holding politicians, holding the agencies that serve the public, holding them accountable. Maybe not every day, maybe not every week, but I think when you look at the full body of work, I think the media does a pretty darn good job of holding, the powers that be accountable for their actions. And I know that if we're not doing that job, I know our newsroom is more than welcome to listen to somebody informed like yourself call us up and say, you need to do a better job, and we'd take that to heart. But I do think we do. I really do think that. I used to be real defensive about hearing that. I used to bristle at the when somebody say, the left-leaning main, media. God, I hate that. I really hate that. That's such a bunch of bull crap. It really is. No apologies for feeling that way at all. Because I've been lucky to be around a lot of really good journalists over the years, and we've never had an agenda to go after somebody. We've never said, let's promote this issue, or let's go after that. Never have done that. And maybe we could do a better job of holding folks accountable, but I know in our heart, I know that that's our mission, and we, we're there to work for our viewers.
I'm not sure what you're intimating by gatekeepers, but I would have to say I've never felt the heavy hand of an editor saying you shall do this gun control story and it shall be in a way that is pleasing to me and wink, wink, nod, nod, you know that I'm in favor of gun control. I mean, in all my years, I have never, ever felt that. Never. What else was I going to say? Oh, it's an aside. I did an obit of Strom Thurmond. When did he die? Like 10, 15 years ago? Yeah. And it was one of these things you had to do the obit way before, you always do the obit way before the guy dies so that it's ready and it's in the can and you have it. And so I had to do it, and Strom would never die. And I had to do the obit, and, you know, he was a pretty unsavory character. I mean, he was a segregationist. Okay, so I did the obit, and I did it pretty straightforward. You know, it was unflinching. He's a segregationist. He groped around with a woman in the back of the car on her way to death row when he was governor. And I did this obit, and my editor was, you know, the eyebrows went up, changed a few things here or there, but not much, and it ran. And I got a lot of hate mail for that obit. And NPR put those letters on the air, as you know how they do. You know, that Elizabeth Arnold, she can't let that guy alone even when he's died. Where's the respect? Blah, 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 blah. So they, in a sense, kind of hung me out to dry, right? I mean, I had to take the heat for running that, for writing what I wrote, which was pretty straightforward and accurate. And so this week when this came out, did anyone see this story? That he had fathered a black child. I was like, vindication. I felt like, okay. So I took some knocks for that. NPR let me hang out to dry a little bit for it. I took knocks, but it was right, and I think I still did the right thing. No one said, oh no, Elizabeth, you shall not harm Strom Thurmond with this obit. We have to be touchy-feely about this. It's a senator. He's died, blah, 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 blah. I've never felt a gatekeeper. I really haven't.
Actually, I may be the only one here who was an editor for very long, and there is a gatekeeping function, but it's not ideological or driven by advertisers or anything like that. You know, you got to put 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag in that job, and it means that a lot of things don't get done. You know, some things the ideas get tossed because they're going to take too long, or you don't have the people to do them, or yeah, I know, it always is the best part. So, I wouldn't be I'd be the first to agree that there's a gatekeeping function. Although, I really think it's not ideological, it's practical as much as anything else.
The last question from the audience was, how does the press get the government to change? How do they break through the wall they've built around state government? First, Mike Dugan responded, followed by Jill Burke, Kyle Hopkins, Elizabeth Arnold, and then Mike Dugan.
I have a little story to tell that sort of goes to that point. When the Exxon Valdez hit the rock, we sent reporters to Valdez, and they had a press conference every day. It was, you know, like the 5 o'clock follies. It was that nobody ever believed anything they said, and there were, you know, sort of fist fights in the audience and that kind of stuff. But what they did manage to do is keep all the reporters penned up. You couldn't get out anywhere, and if you could, you could only go out, you know, I felt like a, you know, third grader, because you had to have somebody or an adult with you going around. And so what the Daily News did was it bought a boat. Now, that was great. It produced a lot of really good stories. But I'm telling you, the Daily News would not buy a boat today. And I doubt that anybody, any news operation in Alaska would do that. So one of the things I'd like you to come away with is some idea of the realities of the situation now. There's just less money floating around. There's less competition, which means less money. And, you know, people have gone to sleep on these things.
I would add, this is kind of like Jill's fantasy world, right? But, you know, I think you change it by being unrelenting and writing about it frequently and raising public awareness to the point where the public doesn't tolerate it. It's not just the press, but this has to be an informed conversation with the citizens in the state who decide that they have a stake in what's taking place and that something needs to change. But if we are forced into decision-making where we either can't, won't, or don't want to pursue these things because they're tedious or boring or not sexy or, you know, whatever, you know, who's going to get inspired to demand more or demand different of our government?
You know, as you're talking, one thing I was thinking about is that, I personally have a bad habit of, like, you know, I'll be denied some information, right? And then I'll write my story and I'll be driving home and I'll kind of realize, you know, I didn't call those guys out for denying that, you know, and you just kind of like, that happens way too often. You know, I think we don't do, at least I don't, you know, do a good enough job of just making it clear to readers that, you know, there's some piece of information that we asked for. And here's what it is. And doesn't that seem reasonable that that is public? And we were denied that. You know, I can remember years ago when we were doing the political blog, and that came up a lot because you're kind of always asking the state government for stuff. And I can remember just doing like a series of blog items, like just whenever someone would deny something, you just say denied, and then you'd explain what you asked for and what you didn't get. And like, I think it'd be fun to see something like that where you just, you know, when a member of the media in Alaska like asks for something when they're denied it, and you just kind of just keep a scorecard, you know, and just kind of and just aggregate that in some place. I think that could be cool.
We might have to start a new blog.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Maurer made it pretty clear that if anybody read any of Maurer's stuff on the Kulik, he made it pretty clear he was pretty angry in pretty much every piece. It was in the lead, right? Like, and they're still not telling us or letting us anywhere near the site. You know, we could have had a boat, but we still couldn't have gotten there. I mean, if somebody bought us a boat, we still couldn't have gotten there. It was a no boat zone, right?
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Addressing Alaskans. This week's program was a roundtable discussion titled Truth and Trust, Alaska's News Media in the 21st Century, hosted by the University of Alaska Anchorage Department of Journalism and Public Communications. Mike Dugan, Atwood Chair of Journalism, served as moderator of the panel, which included NPR correspondent and UAA journalism professor Elizabeth Arnold, KTUU-TV's Steve McDonald, UAA journalism student Pearl Grace Rasmussen, Alaska Dispatch reporter Jill Burke, and Anchorage Daily News reporter Kyle Hopkins. Truth and Trust, Alaska's News Media in the 21st Century, a roundtable discussion, was recorded at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage on February 7, 2013. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans at alaskapublic.org. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Special thanks to our UAA intern, Evan Erickson, who assisted with recording and editing this week's program. Addressing Alaskans' theme song, Trampolines, is by Patrick Lee. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.